We're back and ready for the second half of the baseball season here on the Fantasy Baseball Today podcast. I'm Chris Towers, filling in for Adam Azer, who, congratulations! Adam Azer is the father of a beautiful baby boy. Heath Cummings and Scott White also here. Would you like to say congratulations to Adam as well?
Enough Greg Bird talk already.
I'm surprised he didn't name it Greg Bird, to be honest.
We have a Greg Bird email.
Congratulations, Adam Azer. We're very happy for you.
Of course. Very happy for you and your beautiful wife.
Did you guys enjoy the All-Star game? It was actually a fun All-Star game.
It was very fun. It didn't get fun till late.
Heath, did you watch the All-Star game?
Fun final couple innings.
The home run derby was really good.
Yeah? So that's a no on watching the All-Star game? I didn't watch that.
I did not see one pitch of the All-Star game.
I don't blame you. Okay, Scott, you probably disagree. You like the All-Star game, right? We've talked about this.
I don't think I've missed an All-Star game since I first started watching baseball over 25 years ago.
The allure of the All-Star game is kind of gone a little bit with interleague play. I think that's how I feel. Because when I was a kid, I remember being really excited to like watch Ken Griffey Jr. and like Roberto Alomar and Omar Vizquel and all these players that like I would only see in the playoffs otherwise. And now, you know, MLB TV, Twitter highlights, everything. I can see all those guys. There's no player that I'm like missing out on.
Yeah, what killed it for me was MLB at bat, I think. It's just I see every player every night through a variety of games. And so it's not quite as I don't know. If you enjoy it, I'm glad you enjoyed it. It sounds like it was a very entertaining game. I didn't make the choice not to watch it. It wasn't like, "Oh, I'm not going to watch the All-Star game. It's terrible." I just never turned it on.
I mean, it's you don't see them all on the field together, and it's a looser environment. You know what I love about the All-Star game, and maybe this is like, maybe this can sum up the difference because it's a really mundane thing. But
Mike,
I just
Mike
love
Trout in-game
introductions at the beginning, like them going through and every player individually waving at the crowd like that. I can't miss that. Like that to me is just. It's just something I have to see every year.
I will tell you two standouts from this All-Star game for me. One, Francisco Lindor being interviewed in the middle of the game was just absolutely delightful in baseball and
pretty,
more
pretty
stuff
much
like
all,
that.
Pretty much
all of them
the
except
in-game interviews were great, except for Trout.
Except for Mike Trout, who just has nothing interesting to say ever. And I think it was a bad idea for Rob Manfred to basically put him on blast in that way, but he wasn't wrong. Mike Trout is a...
One other thing we learned during the All-Star game, sometimes it's better if you don't have anything to say.
I don't know. Who are we referring to? Oh! Yeah. No, we won't. Yeah. Okay. The other highlight was a player essentially being traded from the American League to the National League, essentially in the middle of the game, right? Like, that was when it started to be confirmed that Manny Machado was traded to the Dodgers, and that's what we'll talk about right now, because that's the biggest piece of news, and frankly, one of the only real pieces of news that we've gotten over the last couple of days since we last talked to you, Manny Machado, obviously traded to the Dodgers for a pretty interesting prospect haul, right, Scott?
Yeah, only one of them's a big name prospect, yeah. Yusniel Diaz. And when I say big name, it's not like he's some mainstay on top 100 lists.
He's like a top 50 guy now, right?
I saw
America and Baseball Prospectus had him in their top 50 midseason.
Okay. And he's had a good year. He's had one of his best years at AA. Gotten on base a lot, more walks than strikeouts. Kind of reminds me a little of just Jesse Winker, except he's not quite the on-base hawk Winker is. But that similar profile where you good bat skills, but you're not sure how the power is going to play up at the highest level. So we'll see. I mean, it's certainly not a can't-miss prospect. I don't know that they could expect to get a can't-miss prospect with a rental. Those trades, you know, we had the Aroldis Chapman for Gleyber Torres trade a couple years ago. But for the most part, rentals don't fetch that kind of prospect anymore. But there are a few other prospects who, like, they're not named prospects, but they're having interesting years in the minors. So
anybody the fantasy owners need to know about besides Yusniel Diaz, who we'll give the scouting report. You know, obviously we can talk about what Manny Machado the Dodgers means, but frankly, it doesn't change his value that much outside of AL and NL only leagues. So Yusniel Diaz hitting .314, striking out about 15% of the time at AA this year as a 21-year-old, six homers. 20 extra base hits total in 59 games, so not a ton of power, but the kind of profile that we could see becoming maybe a 20-homer guy in the majors. 8 stolen bases, but here's the weird thing. 8 stolen bases on 16 attempts. That's actually his best stolen base percentage ever. 50%. For his career, he has 24 stolen bases and 30 caught stealings. He is a UCLD, as I will say, he is a willing base stealer.
He's not a bad kid. He just gets caught every time he does something wrong.
If not an able one, so not necessarily sure.
I doubt he's going to try much of that in the majors.
So, Scott, tell us about the other prospects.
The second most important, interesting prospect of this group is Dean Kremer, K-R-E-M-E-R, who has huge strikeout numbers in the California League, which is the most hitter-friendly of all the minor leagues. Some impressive numbers there. But it's a prospect who wasn't even on my radar before this trade went through. And that's part of the fun of trades like this, is suddenly these guys become names just because they're involved in trades. And I think maybe going forward we're going to hear Dean Kremer's name a little more.
Well, with the Orioles, track record of getting the most out of pitching prospects, I think you have to be excited about Dean Kremer.
I think you're being sarcastic,
that,
right?
That seemed like it was probably snark.
No.
Yeah. Hey, look, Dylan Bundy's come through for the most part, right?
Yeah.
Took a while.
Yeah. So what do we think this means for the Dodgers lineup? Obviously a team that early on looked like they needed help. Now, they've had too many guys for too few batting order spots already. Where do we think is Manny Machado? First of all, is he going to play shortstop in Los Angeles?
I think mostly yes, but they've also said he's going to play some third base. Mm-hmm. That I mean, Justin, third base is the position Justin Turner plays. He's not one of the guys who moves around. So when Manny Machado plays third base, Justin Turner will be out of the lineup. And you wouldn't think that would happen very often, but when everybody's healthy, which means Puig comes back from an oblique strain that shouldn't keep him out for very long, when everybody's healthy, somebody of note is going to have to be out of the lineup. I imagine it'll be a different somebody every day, but I feel like a player or two is probably going to take the brunt of that. And if Turner's power stroke doesn't come around, it could be him. It could be Jock Peterson. It could be Puig himself. At first, I worried it could be Chris Taylor just because he isn't having the year he had last year. But I think his defense, like he's their, of all the bats they want in their lineup, he's the best center fielder and he's the best second baseman. So I think that'll keep him in the lineup for the most part.
And they need, like, we don't care about this for fantasy, but they need a couple of people that actually carry gloves with them onto the baseball field at certain positions, because they've done some really wacky things in terms of defensive positioning. I'm going to assume that we're just not, when everybody's healthy, we're not going to see Jock Peterson against lefties.
I would assume that'll be the case.
And then we're going to see Kemp / Turner / Puig, and occasionally the other guys too, when they're facing righties.
Yeah, they've mentioned already that Chris Taylor will play shortstop, second base, and the corner outfield, as well as center field. So he'll be in the lineup somewhere most days, I think. Who loses the most value as a result of this trade, besides Manny Machado in AL-only leagues?
Oh, probably Peterson. And yeah. I would be a little worried about Justin Turner and a little worried about Yasiel Puig. Basically, the Dodgers I feel good about, Dodgers hitters I feel really good about right now are Machado, of course, Cody Bellinger, and Max Muncy, with maybe Chris Taylor checking in fourth on that list.
Okay. Let's move on to some injury notes. For the rest of the show, we are going to be talking about some of the pitching rotation and pitching news that has happened over the last couple of days. Sleeper pitchers for, are we calling this week 17? We're about to get to the really confusing part of the season where there's like three different numbers.
Yeah, it really helped that we started the season with half of us disagreeing already. Like from
no,
week
we
one
agreed.
On.
We agreed. There was week one.
And then there was,
yeah,
whenever week two started.
Exactly. So we're going to talk about some week 17 sleeper pitchers, and that's just pitchers to possibly stream this weekend. We'll have Scott White. Scott White, do you have some second half breakouts? Did you see that in the notes?
I do have a couple pitchers and a couple hitters to
good
throw your
great
way.
We're going to talk about some of your top prospects. You did your mid-season top 25 prospects list. So we'll talk about that. We're going to fire up the call-up-o-meter. You know, you guys know that one?
Don't know that one, but and, it'll be fun. You know I love my meters.
I mean, any,
you know Heath's always going to go 10-1, and I'm going to hem and haw and go
what,
maybe
what do you
like
mean?
6.
I don't
5.
Ever go 10-1. You're going to talk for about 45 seconds about how you feel about the situation without giving a number. And then I'm going to say nothing but the number itself.
And we're
going
to have your emails on fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. And we'll have some second half hot takes. What do I call that?
Bold predictions. I do not like hot takes.
First, let's talk about some of the injury notes from the last couple of days. Wilson Ramos was placed on the disabled list with a hamstring injury. That'll keep him out potentially through the end of the month, which is an interesting situation because the Rays were definitely looking to trade Wilson Ramos. He was one of the bigger catchers available, and that creates some interesting situations with a team like Washington who pretty desperately needs a catcher upgrade, so that's something to keep an eye on. Yoenis Cespedes homered, played first in a rehab game on Wednesday night. He has played 3 straight games and could be back as the Mets DH on Friday. Scott Schebler's on the DL with a sprain in his right AC joint.
I am not happy that Scott Schebler is injured. I hope that he is not in pain and he recovers quickly. But Jesse Winker, everyday baseball player.
I mean, this is what we needed from, because all 4 of those guys, really, are fantasy relevant to some degree. I think Adam Duvall's probably the least interesting, but...
Yeah, I would have much more quickly sacrificed Adam Duvall's AC joint, but...
But Jesse Winker now hopefully will play every day. Billy Hamilton hopefully will play every day, and he's been good since the start of June, or at least he's been... The Billy Hamilton we hope to see. He's hitting like 270, stealing a bunch of bases, and Adam Duvall will hit home runs. Might be all he does, but... So that's the interesting news from there. Andrew Miller should be back from the DL after the All-Star break. Drew Pomeranz made his 3rd and potentially final start in his rehab assignment as he comes back from a biceps injury. He could be the replacement in the rotation for Eduardo Rodriguez. Any interest in Drew Pomeranz?
Yeah, I mean, he's going to be pitching for a good team, obviously has a pretty good track record. He wasn't throwing as hard as we're used to seeing before going on the DL, so it's not a surprise he struggled. But if he's back to form, I mean, he's worth a flyer in case he is back to form.
My thing, and I think it's probably something we should talk about on this show, because a lot of people probably doing the same thing I did going in and saying, okay, I've got to get my lineup set for this week because we have one stupid game on a Thursday. Yeah. And I don't have an excess of roster spots. There are a lot of players. And this has been a trend I think Scott's talked about over the last couple of weeks. There have been more high-profile guys coming off the disabled list than going on it. Mm-hmm. And there are a lot of players that are coming off the disabled list over the week, expected to come back Friday. I'm dropping a lot more guys than I'm adding today and yesterday.
Yep. Yeah, by the way, the Cardinals and Cubs do play tonight. Is that like a rain makeup, or is that just...
They have five games
yep.
in this
yep.
three-game week for everybody else.
Yeah.
So, like, you're starting... I'm starting Ian Happ in a league.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense. Like, the part of the... you can't fully take advantage of it, especially with the Cubs, because they have so many guys they move in and out of the lineup, Happ among them, Zobrist, Hayward... Pretty much anybody who's available is somebody who doesn't play every day. So you can't expect them to play the full 5 games. But, I mean, Cardinals, when in doubt, if you're looking to add somebody off waivers this week, Cardinals and Cubs is not a bad idea just because 2 extra games, like basically twice as many games.
And I think on the long week they have 12 games, I saw, which is just ridiculous.
So Harrison Bader, Colton Wong,
Jed Jerko is probably my favorite.
That's
between
the
two
of.
Teams. Yeah. Triple eligible, only like 20% owned on CBS leagues. So
Albert
even
Almora.
Less than that on other sites, probably.
Albert Almora has been hitting the ball really well this season, so he's someone to consider. And a few other injury notes before we move on. Sean Doolittle threw off flat ground as he recovers from a toe injury. He could be back fairly shortly. And Gleyber Torres is hoping to be back from his hip injury on July 23rd, so that'll be a nice one. What are your expectations for Gleyber Torres in the second half? Do you think he's playing over his head?
Yeah.
The home run pace has to slow.
Yep.
He can make up in other areas, I think. Because it's a fine, like, it's a quality batted ball profile. Like, he's not just selling out for homers. Good line drive rate. I think he's good.
All right, let's talk about some pitching notes, and then we'll look at pitchers for the weekend that you can possibly add to stream based on Scott White's sleeper pitchers for this weekend on CBSSports.com/fantasy. Pitching notes, DeGrom's agent basically asked for a trade. That is obviously Jacob DeGrom asked for a trade from the Mets. I mean, he basically said, give me an extension or trade me. What are we doing here? He's basically saying he wants to be traded.
He's under contract through next year as well, right?
I believe so.
Okay. Well,
I mean, it's not like it's common practice to give a guy an extension, a guy that high profile, an extension a couple years out from free agency.
Right.
So.
He's asking for a trade. He's not really asking for an extension.
I guess.
Miles Michaelis will start Sunday versus the Chicago Cubs. Nick Tropiano will return from his injury against Houston. He had a 4.83 ERA, been on the DL since June 15th. Probably don't have a lot of interest in him. And Jesse Hahn and Eric Skoglund began their rehab assignments for the Royals. Any interest at all in either of those guys?
No.
All right.
Well, if he doesn't, then I don't.
All right. Let's talk about sleeper pitchers for this weekend. Scott, who's your favorite?
My favorite, and this is a guy who's bumping up against the 80% threshold, but my favorite's Kyle Gibson, who I feel like should be universally owned and probably would be if not for a 4-6 record. I mean, the ERA is good, the whip, the strikeout rate. The fact he's facing the Royals, guy goes 7 innings consistently. I think you're going to pick him up if he isn't owned already, and you won't want to drop him.
So over the last 365 days, he's made 31 starts, 3.48 ERA over 186 and a third innings, 8.6 K per nine, 1.234 FIP. Or 1.234 ERA, or Jesus, 1.234 whip with a 292 BABIP. So not a lot of good luck there. He looks to be a much better pitcher than we probably gave him credit for coming into the season. So probably someone that you'll keep on your roster. Anybody else on this list who you really want to talk about, Scott?
Gray looked good in his first start back. He's at the Humidor Chase Field, and I think when your options are limited this week, you gamble on the upside there. We'll talk about him a little more later, though. I think among those that are scarcely owned, spoiler, that pretty much everybody's going to have a chance to pick up, my favorite is Herman Marquez, who is – his road numbers just keep getting better and better. He's also at Chase Field, obviously. 2.62 ERA, 0.98 whip, 9.2 strikeouts per nine innings in 9 road starts. And his last start was actually against the Diamondbacks. It was a home start where he's terrible usually. And he had a really strong start against them. 2 earned runs, 6 innings with 8 strikeouts. He looks like a safe play, even if, you know, he may not be somebody you want to hold on to since he is so bad at home.
Yeah, he has improved this season. Swinging strike rate is up, strikeout rate up as well. You look at the FIP and it's not a great story, but I think that's probably Coors inflated and the true talent level on the road. He has a 3.79 xFIP. That probably tells closer to what he is on the road. And if he's a mid to high 3s ERA guy with a strikeout per inning, he's probably pretty useful every time he's pitching on the road.
Half the time, yeah. The two guys I'm excited about, and it's a lot of it has to do with matchup, but it's guys that have underperformed and have big upside and have great matchups, Nick Pivetta and Vince Velasquez.
Now, who are they going up against?
The Padres.
That is a great situation for both of those guys.
Although, now we can probably not say the best matchup in baseball anymore.
Because Will Myers is back?
It's definitely the Royals. Oh, well, it's probably the Orioles now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Those are the two lowest, though, even though they have the DH, the Royals and Orioles are the two lowest scoring teams in the majors, which is pretty amazing in and of itself.
God, and obviously, the Royals playing Orioles. A great park, too. That's going to be really bad. They never walk. That's a bad lineup, yeah. I hadn't really considered the ramifications of that, but the Orioles are going to be a team that you should probably target with your pitchers moving forward.
And facing them this week is the Blue Jays.
Okay, so you'll get a You get a Jay Happ start against them. That'll probably be a good one. You'll probably get a...
I mean, Jay Happ and Marcus Stroman are too owned to call sleepers. The other one is Sam Gaviglio, who's not somebody I can get excited about, but if you have to go really deep searching for a pitcher this week...
I don't mind him as a sleeper against this team. He's got, I think, better stuff than we probably give him credit for. He just hasn't figured out how to use it yet.
And the Orioles, with Manny Machado this year, are tied with the Padres for the lowest WOBA in baseball. So it's probably not going to get better.
That's not great. All right, you guys want to do your bold predictions for the second half?
Sure.
Scott, you want to go first? We'll go round table. Scott goes first,
round
then
table.
Heath, then me.
Okay,
I have to come
how's
up with
this?
Mine.
Is this bold enough? You ready? Chris Bryant hits twice as many home runs as he hit in the first half.
What, he hit 10?
10. He hits 20 in the second half.
I could definitely see
it's
that happen.
A monster finish to the season. It really doesn't make sense, the lack of power. I can't completely ignore it because it's you know, it dates back to last year. It's over a year long where this has been the case, but the batted ball profile suggests he still should be hitting lots of homers. Ton of fly balls. You know, pretty good amount of hard contact. And it's just surprising that it's been so low. So I think he comes roaring back here. And if he doesn't come roaring back, it's seriously going to jeopardize his early round status, I think, heading into next year.
Let's say he just continues on this pace. How far does Chris Bryant fall for you next year? Is he a second round pick or third round pick?
He's definitely not a second round pick. You know, just a couple weeks ago, I did.
Because, like, he hasn't been much.
I projected the first two rounds for next year based on, obviously, what we've seen so far this year. And Chris Bryant was barely creeping into the second round still on that list. Like, but that was giving him a lot of benefit of the doubt.
If he doesn't
have a monster second half, he loses that benefit of the doubt. Probably maybe slips to the fourth round, honestly.
He's barely been better than Nick Castellanos this season. I'm not sure if he has, but I mean, the DL stint probably affects that, but even on a per game basis, I'm not sure he's been better than Nick Castellanos.
Yeah.
Heath, bold prediction?
Oh, I thought we were doing two.
Yeah.
Scott gave two already?
We're going round table, one each.
Okay, I'll talk about the only player I'm allowed to talk about anymore. Jake Bowers will be a top 10 first baseman in the second half.
In both formats?
Definitely in points.
Okay.
Definitely in points. I don't know that he can be top 10 in Roto, but it's possible. But I do think he will start. We'll see a little bit more power. Like Chris Bryant, he will probably hit twice as many home runs as he hit in the first half as well. Part of that's because he only played 36 games in the first half.
He's going to hit six in the second half?
But he's only going to play like 60. He hit five in the first half in 36 games. He hits 10 in the second half, gives him 15, steals seven or eight bases. The average, I would not be surprised if it's a little bit higher as well.
Okay. Top 10, that might be bold. I'm going to go a little bolder.
That's pretty bold. I'm starting him over Edwin Encarnacion this week.
Yeah, that one's interesting. I'm not sure I would do that.
Scott?
What was the top option again?
I'm starting Jake Bowers at first base over Edwin Encarnacion.
For this week?
It is an extended week.
Oh, an extended week. But Encarnacion's a little banged up.
He has 10 games to Encarnacion's 9, and 6 of those games are against the Marlins and Orioles.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think it's crazy. I don't think it's necessarily a bad idea. And sorry for not listening. I was thinking about my next bold prediction.
I was hoping you were going to say you were like thinking about food or something. That would have been better.
No.
That would have been more understandable. I'm going to go with a bold prediction that builds off one of my second half breakouts from Tuesday's or Monday's episode, whenever we did that. Yoan Moncada will be a top 5 second baseman in the second half of the season in rotisserie scoring. Of late, over the last about 20 games, he has really cut down his strikeout rate. Now, it's still very high. It's 28% or something over the last 20 games. He's always going to strike out a lot, but he makes really, really good contact. He's fast. All he needs is just be bad at striking out. Just strike out a lot instead of as much as Joey Gallo, and I think he can be a 280 hitter with 10 home runs and 15 steals in the second half.
I don't think you thought this one through.
Why is that?
Is Yoan Moncada going to be better than Jose Altuve?
No.
Is he going to be better than Jose Ramirez?
No.
Is he going to be better than Ozzie Albies? You don't believe that. Is he going to be better in Roto than D. Gordon?
No.
Is he going to be better than Brian Dozier? Second half Brian Dozier?
Yeah. Yeah, I could see him being better. Look, it's bold.
Okay.
It's bold.
Oh, and Max Muncy.
Relying on a little good fortune.
Max Muncy?
It's bold.
Max Muncy.
Okay, look, you might be using Jose Ramirez at third base. You might be using Max Muncy.
That does not change the fact that he's not a top five second baseman.
He's going to be a top five second base only player in the second half.
Second base only player. Okay, that I buy that because that eliminates Ramirez, Gordon, and Max Muncy. So there you go.
Scott?
Yeah. Okay, you want another bold prediction?
I do. That's the whole point.
That is the point of the exercise. My other bold prediction is that AJ Minter is the Braves closer for the rest of the season. Aroldis Vizcaíno's course is on the DL right now with shoulder inflammation. It's not thought to be a serious injury, but it's on the heels of, I think it's the second stint.
It's the second time
injury,
he's had a shoulder
frankly.
Injury, yeah.
Yeah. So the thought is Minter, with maybe some Dan Winkler's going to fill in, and Vizcaíno will just take the job when he gets back. He's been fine in the role, whatever. But I just feel like the Braves really, really want AJ Minter to be their closer. I feel like this is the momentum he needs to just kind of take the job and run with it. He had some control issues early in the year, but since the start of May, only 5 walks, and since the start of June, only 2 walks. You know, he's getting his fastball up to 98, 99 again, more than a strikeout per inning. And I think he's going to do well enough that they just don't give the job back to Vizcaíno once he's ready to go. So that's a bold prediction. Hopefully it's bold enough for you.
It's fine.
Like, he is currently the Braves closer, right?
He's, yeah, I mean, if I had to pick.
So.
Well, I'm saying rest of season, though.
Okay, so he will keep his job.
No, he's a fill-in closer, Heath. Come on. Come on. Jerk. Clearly, Heath, it's not bold enough.
Let's hear your extremely bold prediction that nobody can question because it's just so bold.
Carlos Rodon will be the 4th best left-handed starting pitcher in the American League in the second half.
That is bold. I can't compete with that boldness.
Like, who's his competition? Who's he going to be better than him?
Second base?
Who's he going to be better than? Let's talk about it that way. Is he going to be better than James Paxton?
Oh, I'm going to give you all the names that he's going to be better than. Okay. I'll just go down. David Price is a left-handed pitcher in the American League.
That's fine.
Yes.
Dallas Keuchel.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Jay Happ.
This is not very. This is not.
Sean Manaea.
This is not bold. This is extremely unbold.
The 4th best left-handed pitcher in the American League.
This is italicized.
He's Marco Gonzalez.
I mean, it's reasonably bold to say he's going to be better than all those guys who've
Andrew
played
Heaney.
Better than him so far. But we're not even. You said top 4 in the AL, right? The AL that couldn't fit Blake Snell on its All-Star roster initially.
Yeah,
it's
not that bold.
He's not going to be better than
it's
Blake.
It's not
Snell.
That bold.
It's extremely
not that
bold.
It's not that
to
bold.
To say Carlos Rodon's going to be a top 4 pitcher in the AL.
A left-handed pitcher.
Oh, did I miss the left-handed part?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So who is it? It's Snell, Paxton.
There's a guy for the Red Sox that throws really hard.
Sale.
Chris wrote a piece about him. Those three, and then Rodon, the big 4 lefties in the American League.
That's not bold at all. I'm going to go bold. How about this? In the second half of the 2018 Major League Baseball season, Gerrit Cole will not be a top 20 starting pitcher in rotisserie fantasy scoring. Top 20 pitcher.
Okay.
How about
Whoa. Wait, so you just threw the relievers in there too?
Yeah, I mean, they're not that good. Is that bold enough? That's certainly bolder than yours.
That's bold. I mean,
it's bolder than throwing 3 splits.
Gerrit Cole has not been.
If that would surprise most people, and it would surprise me if he doesn't finish in the top 12 rest of season.
I said top 20.
Top 20, sorry. It would surprise me if he didn't do that. So I would say that's bold, because I would be surprised if that doesn't happen. And you're predicting that
he's been
that
the number
will,
5
finish
pitcher.
Outside of the top 20. So that's bold enough for me.
He's been the number 5 pitcher so far this season.
And he's not been in the top 20 for the last 2 months.
He probably has been. No. Lots of strikeouts.
He's been good. He hasn't been, he hasn't been like
super
best
ace.
Pitcher in baseball good that he was in April.
All right, let's, Scott, let's talk about some second half breakouts for you. How many do you have? I know you've got some pitchers and some hitters.
I've got a couple pitchers, a couple hitters. I'm going to be writing a column for each of these later, so I'll have even more. I think Jake Bauer's suggestion is probably going to wind up on the list.
Yeah.
Hitters for me, it also includes Jesse Winker, who we've gotten into a little today. But he's been basically over the last 6 weeks, he's been
like a 1,000 OPS guy,
like a 1,200 OPS guy, because he gets on base so much and, you know, just hitting for a decent amount of power, a 20 to 25 homer guy, that kind of pace makes him just a complete monster for how much he gets, like almost like a mini Joey Votto, frankly. And if he's playing regularly, if the batted ball profile, if he continues to live up to that, which is, you know, the power he's shown recently is more in line with that than what he was doing earlier in the season. If he carves out this everyday role for himself, it could be huge. And I took the step of actually, you know, this is obviously kind of a gut feeling sort of thing. I actually dropped Kyle Tucker for him in a points league. But Kyle Tucker's like twice as owned as Jesse Winker.
Sure.
And so I went ahead and made the move to do that.
So since May 24th, he is hitting .341 with a .461 on base percentage and a 1,017 OPS. He strikes out 12.9% of the time in that span. He walks about 18% of the time. He's not hitting for a ton of power, like you said. 35.
Yeah, that's been more recent. Been more like the last.
Well,
six weeks.
That's when he hit his first home run. That's why he hadn't hit a home run in his first 44 games of the season. His last 41, he has 7. So that's probably 25 homer pace over the course of a full season. But that just shows how good the contact abilities are and how good the plate discipline is for him. He's been a lot better than I think most people realize this season.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, playing time has had something to do with that. The slow start has had a lot to do with that.
And he's gotten to avoid
coming around in a loud way.
And he's gotten to avoid lefties, so that helps too.
He's not terrible against them.
No, he has a 7.13, and that what 7.13 OPS. And what you're hoping for, we talked about it a lot with like Andrew Benintendi, is you're just hoping these guys can hold their own against lefties.
Yeah.
All right. Who's your next breakout? Do you want to go with a pitcher or a hitter?
Well, the other one we've already talked a little about is John Gray, who I think, I mean, we've gone over the numbers before, but when he got sent down, he had top 12 FIP, top 12 swinging strike rate, big improvement over last year, by the way. I was kind of skeptical coming into this season because the swinging strike rate just didn't match up with the strikeout rate, and particularly with the unfavorable home environment, I wasn't sure that was going to hold up, but his pitches have been more overpowering this season. He's just had this issue with runners on base that he's never had in the past before.
Yeah.
But the numbers were just dreadful against them. And it led to this kind of snowball effect every time things started to go wrong for him. He only got 2 starts in the minors, and obviously not many runners reached against him. So I don't know that he's worked it out. But since it's something that he hadn't really struggled with in the past, I think it's just a small change he's going to need. And if he makes that change, he could be an ace the rest of the way, a guy who just spent some time in the minors.
Yeah, he was weirdly hittable last season, had an 80% contact rate for his career at 75.6%. And this season, that's down to 71%. So he induces a lot of swings and misses. Last season, he didn't, but he still got a decent number of strikeouts. He's taken both of those skills to the next level. Heath, I think you and I talked about this on Monday or Tuesday. The one issue with John Gray is, yes, he has a 3.19 Sierra and a 2.83 xFIP and a 3.03 FIP, and all of those, I think, are top 10 marks in baseball. He's probably not going to reach them just because of where he pitches his home games. You know, for his career, he has a 3.36 FIP and a 4.65 ERA. Last season, he had a 3.18 FIP and a 3.67 ERA, but it's a really low FIP.
He doesn't have to reach it to be really good.
Yeah, if he's half a run worse than his FIP for the rest of the season, he's a 3.50 ERA pitcher with 11 Ks per 9. So that's still really good. And I think that's the takeaway.
Yes, sir.
Two more breakouts from Scott White.
All right, Jurickson Profar, I think, is going to break out. He's already been usable this year, especially in points leagues, because good plate discipline and a lot of extra base hits, not so much home runs. But you look at the batted ball profile, and it seems like he's had a lot of bad luck. His BABIP's only about 250, despite a high line drive rate and a not-so-high fly ball rate, which can often hurt BABIP. And yet the fly ball rate isn't so low that you expect it to limit his home runs in a severe way. Yep,
Not a ton of infield fly balls either, or pop-ups.
Yeah, yeah. I think he's had some bad luck, and I think the best is yet to come.
The thing, and this is, we have had two presidential elections since Jurickson Profar made his major league debut, and he's only 25.
Yeah.
It's incredible. And this was a guy who was, you know, I don't know if he was the best prospect in baseball.
He was. He was. Baseball America had him as number one the year he debuted, I think.
Yeah, and he got called up really fast, has gotten kind of jerked around in his playing time, has had injury issues. I think he had... Did he have Tommy John? Or was it a shoulder issue?
I think it was shoulder.
Yeah, he had some serious injury issues, and they've kind of derailed his career, but still only 25. He has 9 homers, 8 steals, 50 runs scored, and 46 RBI in 85 games. He's on a 90-90 pace almost. So, you know, if the batting average corrects, he could be a 270 hitter with, you know, potentially 20-20 potential.
Yeah, I think in points leagues, you know, I might be willing to make the bold prediction if he could be top 5 at second base, and obviously he's eligible in more spots than Yoan Moncada is. You know, roto leagues it'll be a little tougher because I don't expect a huge home run total from him, but
he is eligible everywhere except for catcher and pitcher.
He could be, before this power explosion from Jose Ramirez, I think he could be what Jose Ramirez was. I think that's the upside for Jurickson Profar.
And one more pitcher breakout. Let's hear it.
I'm going to go with old standby, Domingo Germán, who's fluctuated between great and bad. But I think the stuff is rare for any pitcher, much less a rookie pitcher, in terms of getting swinging strikes on 3 different pitches. And with a little better consistency, I think he could be a stud. I do wonder if he'll get the opportunity, because you assume the Yankees are going to be buyers. And well, I think Sonny Gray would probably get ousted before Germán does. At some point, Germán could run into an innings issue as well. But he seems to show up on the most dropped list every time he has a bad start. I know I hear a bit on Twitter every time he has a bad start.
It's a roller coaster.
Yeah, and I think it's going to level off here in the most positive way.
He feels like 2017 Nick Pivetta to me. Like, he's just interesting enough to not write off. But
wouldn't that also be 2018 Nick Pivetta?
Well, Nick Pivetta's ERA is a run lower, and his FIP's a run lower, and his Sierra's a run lower. Like, he's been... Okay. Considerably better.
It's a high 4 ERA, though. Like, I don't think everybody.
Look, you're
totally
a high 4 ERA, okay?
And I want to go back to the Profar thing, because it made me think of a decent deeper league or just roto only breakout. Okay. And it's a similar guy. It's Adalberto Mondesi.
Okay.
Guy
Good.
That made
I'm glad.
Made his debut a long, long time ago, but is still just 22 years old.
This is Raul.
He had a different name when he made his debut.
That was so long. He's a different person.
Yes. Has a dad and a brother named Raul as well.
Well, I get why you'd want to go by a different name.
Yes.
That'd get confusing at dinner.
Exactly.
Raul passed the potatoes.
He started to show a little progress before the break. He has big stolen base potential. It's still too small of a sample size to get too excited about his batted ball data, but it looks a lot better than it did the last couple of times that he's been up. And so there's a chance that he makes a pretty big impact in Roto in the second half.
It's a question of whether he can hit for power. He either needs to hit for more power for me, or he needs to stop striking out, because he's still striking out 27% of the time.
That's true.
And the profile doesn't necessarily suggest that there's a lot of power there. He did hit 13 homers last season at AAA. He had 5 before getting called up. But like, that's the difference between him and obviously it's a different caliber of prospect, but Yoan Moncada. where if Yoan Moncada strikes out 27% of the time, I'm thrilled because I think he can be a star. Mondesi probably needs to get to like the Delino DeShields, like 20% range.
Yep.
And he doesn't walk at all.
Yeah.
Which doesn't help.
But he runs. Some other notes before we move on to the last couple of segments of the show. The Nationals could revisit a deal for JT Realmuto, so that's something to keep an eye on. He could be a second-half breakout, if only because he'll have more counting stat opportunities.
Well, can you be a breakout when you've been the best catcher in fantasy?
Like, Evan Gattis has been the best catcher in fantasy.
What's he going to break out to?
Well, he could maybe not break out, but he could have better RBI and run numbers hitting in that lineup than he does in the Marlins lineup. I put the Indians are interested in Andrew Miller. In the notes, I would hope they're interested in Andrew Miller, but they are also, in addition, interested in Brad Hand. That's something to keep an eye on with Brad Hand because he would pretty obviously not be the closer in Cleveland.
Are we sure?
So, I guess Shaw's had a bad season, right? His ERA is like in the four range?
I'm not sure, actually, but it's been their bullpen's without Andrew Miller, it's been bad.
Yeah. Let me look that up. Sorry. Not
Shaw?
Cody Allen has a 466 ERA.
I think he can definitely replace Shaw.
That's who I was thinking of. Cody Allen has a 466 ERA. The FIP is 428, so he has been pretty bad this season. The entire bullpen really has had issues keeping the ball in the yard. Every single pitcher that's currently in their bullpen, with the exception of Oliver Perez and Brandon Guyer, who's only pitched one inning, has a home run per nine above 1.4. That's a problem. So I guess Brad Hand could be the closer in Cleveland, but I probably wouldn't expect it.
I mean, Cody Allen's a fine closer. It's part of the reason you were always halfway predicting Andrew Miller would take over at some point, because it really was no contest which was the better between the two of them, Miller and Allen. If Miller does come back healthy and is able to contribute in the second half, and they do acquire Brad Hand, you'd have to think, both of them being lefties, they'd want to save a lefty. Like instead of having two lefties bridge to the ninth, they'd want to have one actually pitch the ninth. So I don't know that Hand would definitely be out of a closer gig, but it's possible, no matter where he goes, that he could end up playing second fiddle and not get saves anymore, which would be sad because he's a great closer.
Any closer candidates in San Diego to keep an eye on? Their whole bullpen is pitching well. Part of that is Pecco. Part of that's just they've got a lot of guys getting a lot of strikeouts. Kirby Yates has been the best of them. 143 ERA.
He would be the replacement. But, you know, Hand signed or already signed long term. There's a chance Kirby Yates is the one traded instead of Hand. Like, sure. I don't think it's a foregone conclusion Hand's going to get traded like it was with Machado and, you know, some of these other guys with expiring contracts, basically.
All right, other notes. Alex Bregman homered in the All-Star game, got robbed in the home run derby because he doesn't hit his dongs far enough and didn't get the bonus time.
It's the worst rule in sports.
No.
I would argue clearly not.
There are dozens of worse rules.
No, there are dozens of more impactful bad rules. But this
like,
one
it's
is
the
just
home
awful.
Run derby. No, I enjoy the home run derby, but I enjoy it because it's a fun, light spectacle. Like, outrage over the home run derby just doesn't compute for me.
And Josh Hader will not be suspended for his bad tweets as a teenager. Let's move on to Scott White's top prospects. Well, let's blaze through this, Scott. What we're going to do is do the call-up-o-meter, which is it's a little different. It's 0 through 5. Okay? You got that? 0, no way he's getting called up. We're not doing all 25. We're just doing the guys that you think have a chance to get called up.
I can do, because, you know, usually it's two numbers I'm debating between. Yeah. So, the 5.
Are we using decimals?
No decimals.
Okay.
It's 1-0 through decimals. 5, so technically it's 6 numbers.
0 is not a number.
You're not a number. Vladimir Guerrero Jr., what are the chances he gets called up?
3. Okay. He has been playing again, been playing technically on a rehab assignment, but he's going to start back at AAA. He left off at AA. So that, I think, pushes it into the possible range that he does get the call. But it'll take him, you know, hitting the ground running, basically, because I think if we get I think if we get to late August and he's not up yet, there's no reason to open that can of worms.
Well, that was the question I was going to have, because the September call-ups don't open that can of worms, right? September call-ups do not count service time. So are we counting September call-ups?
I should know this.
What are the chances we see him in 2018 in the majors?
Oh, if we're counting September call-ups, then I'll say it's 5. I think we'll see him in September.
Okay. I mean, we didn't with Acuna last year. I think it's a comparable situation to that. Acuna was obviously too good for the minors by this point last year.
Okay, I'll say 4.
And they just kept holding out.
Eloy Jimenez.
That I'm going to call 4. I think there's a better chance of that. Beat writers have basically...
He's hurt right now, right?
Written like it's a foregone conclusion. Yeah, but it's not a long-term injury. He'll be back very shortly, and I think he'll be up.
4.
Fernando Tatis.
You don't even care what my number is. I want to give a number.
I'm listening.
Okay.
You said a 4.
I'm
going to
call
both.
That a 2.
Fernando Tatis Jr. a 2.
I'd bet against it.
Yeah, I'll say 1.
19.
Forrest Whitley.
I will go 3 there. He's also hurt with a strained oblique. But when he first got back from his suspension, he was lighting it up. And I think the Astros might call him up to help out of the
bullpen. Best pitching prospect in baseball,
right? It's the first one you've named, so yeah.
2. Brendan Rodgers having a little bit of a disappointing season at Double A, I guess. Or is he at Triple A?
He is at Double A.
And hasn't exactly lit the world on fire. Doesn't have great plate discipline, but his hit tool has overcome that so far. But what are the chances?
I mean,
we see
17 homers, 11 steals, 854 OPS. At least that's what it was when I wrote the column.
That would play.
It's pretty good. It's not. It's one of the few rocky stops that's not extremely hitter friendly. And obviously, he's going to an extremely hitter friendly park in the majors, which is a big part of what's always impacted my rankings with him.
But is it obvious he's going there this year?
No, it's not. I'd give it a 3. I think it's possible.
I'll say 2.
Michael Kopech, Chicago White Sox pitching prospect.
That? You're skipping all the ones.
Yeah.
If you're doing that on purpose.
Yeah, I'm just doing the ones that you gave a chance to. There's a lot of guys. We got to move, you know.
I'm not actually going to give
flowing.
1 when we do this exercise. Okay, so Michael Kopech, I'm going to give a 3 also. He's been pretty bad, but he's been pretty bad at AAA. And certainly looked this spring like he was going to get a chance this year. Now it's in question.
I'll say 4.
Yeah, walking almost 6 batters per 9, but also striking out more than 12 per 9. Mitch Keller, starting pitching prospect for the Pittsburgh Pirates.
I'll call that 1 or 2.
Sure.
He's been good, and he's up to AAA now, but I don't know why the Pirates, they don't really have much incentive to call him up.
Keston Hiura? Am I pronouncing that correctly?
Sounds right to me.
Number 9 pick in the 2017 draft for the Milwaukee Brewers. Has a career 924 OPS. He's at Double A right now. Chances we see him this season.
Really good hitter. Kind of a Scooter Gennett profile. What Scooter Gennett has become, obviously. Mm-hmm. Not what we thought he was years ago. I think it's probably like a 3. If the Brewers trade for Brian Dozier, let's say, it drops to a 1.
They really need help in the middle infield.
Yeah.
Like, Tyler Saladino has played well, and I liked Tyler Saladino as a sleeper last year, but that's not the answer at either middle infield spot.
Or the Brewers could trade for Scooter Gennett himself. Bring him back.
I don't think they will.
Say we're sorry.
I don't think the Reds are going to trade him.
You don't think so?
I don't think so.
I think they might get Whit Merrifield.
Sure.
Possible, yeah.
It's a good Milwaukee Brewers player.
Well, and there's that Brewers Royals trading connection. They've done a lot of that.
The famed Brewers Royals trading connection.
Yeah.
Luis Urias.
That one looks pretty likely. I'll call that a 4.
I'm going to say a 5. You bet Urias he's coming up.
And Austin Riley, another team who, not an obvious need at third base, but I don't know if Johan Camargo is the long-term answer, and Austin Riley has really come on this year as a prospect.
He's missed time recently with a sprained knee. I think that slowed the momentum, and I think Johan Camargo's done well enough that it's not clear this version of Riley would be an upgrade. He could, you know, he's only 21. He could use a little more time there. So I'll call it a 3. The Braves have also been they were mentioned in the Machado talks, though I don't think that was ever realistic. Mike Moustakas, you keep hearing that name. It's possible they stick with Camargo. It's possible they bring in someone else from the outside. I think Riley's chances are dropping by the week as opposed to rising.
So the best minor leaguers to stash, I think Eloy Jimenez is probably at the top of that list.
I'd still go Vladimir Guerrero over him, even though he's – I gave Eloy Jimenez a higher – I put him higher on the call-up-o-meter just because, I mean, if Guerrero gets called up, like, that's obviously the guy you want. Like, he's just – it's him and everybody else among prospects right now.
All right, and let's move on to emails to close out the show. Fantasybaseball at CBSi.com. Morgan has a question. Dear Fred, Bam Bam, and Barney, he's a 12-team head-to-head categories league with OPS, quality starts, and strikeouts. He has a conundrum. He's looking to fortify his pitching and all of these guys on waivers. How would you rank them? Vince Velasquez, Carlos Rodon, Steven Matz, Zach Wheeler, and Luke Weaver. Again, Velasquez, Rodon, Matz, Wheeler, Weaver.
I go Velasquez, Weaver, Wheeler, Rodon, and Matz.
Okay, but Matz last.
It
Velasquez
sounds like
first.
He would go Rodon first.
Yeah, I think I would go Rodon, Velasquez, Weaver, Wheeler, Matz.
Okay, AL only 8-team league. Guy in his league lost Machado yesterday and freaked out trying to replace him. Grade the trade. He gives Devers, Matt Olson, and Randall Grichuk, gets Aaron Judge.
Man, this is an A++ in like a normal kind of league.
Yeah.
In an AL-only league, that does change the math a little bit.
Okay.
8 teams, mm-hmm. I think, makes it closer to just a regular type of league, so I will still give you a B on this trade. It's good.
Mm-hmm. Take a B+. Yeah, so we're in the same.
Not as great as it sounds.
All right, since Adam's not here, but he is celebrating a joyous life occasion, we do have to get some Greg Bird talk on the podcast. Ryan from Boston, a Yankee fan in Red Sox territory. Objectively, I think Chris and Heath would be excited about Greg Bird if his name wasn't Greg Bird. Look at the data. 40% hard contact rate, 47% fly ball rate, 55% pull rate. He's hitting the ball hard. He's hitting the ball in the air to where Yankee Stadium's short porch should help him. I understand he hasn't broken out, but why isn't this someone I should be excited about stashing? Seems like he'd easily get hot and hit 15 homers in the second half. He absolutely could get hot and hit 15 homers in the second half. I don't think there's anybody here who questions that. I think the crux of the discussion has been that we give this guy, some of us, give this guy credit for something he's never really done, or he's only done for a month at a time, and there are so many first basemen out there who can do what he, even the best version of him, projects to do, that he needs to be a lot better than what we've seen for me to get excited about him.
There are probably 2-3 dozen hitters who I could see like exploding with a 20 homer second half out of left field, you know? And he's among them. But yeah, it's kind of unfair. It's kind of unfair, frankly, to him to always single him out as the guy, because he hasn't done it. And there's obviously been a lot of excuses that could be made, but until he does it, that's not who he is.
Explanations.
You know?
Explanations.
Not excuses.
Oh, okay. Ryan has a point here. We bash on Greg Bird excessively because of Adam Azer.
It's a bit.
Yes. He does have that potential in the second half. He also has the potential to be terrible. He's a fine guy to have in your corner infield spot in a roto league.
All right, another one from Matt. Another Yankees question for Adam. Aaron Boone was on a podcast with CeCe and Ryan Rucho today when the conversation turned to Justice Sheffield, starting pitching prospect. Boone said he's putting himself in the conversation to be a part of the mix really soon. Given how he's pitched at AAA, where he has a 2.53 ERA in 57 innings, how stashable is Justice Sheffield?
He has a really high walk rate.
Yeah, 4.0 for the season, 3.8 per nine in AAA, and the strikeout rate has gone down quite a bit since getting to AAA.
Did he didn't quite crack my midseason top 25. He was right on the fringe there. But the only reason he would have is because of proximity. Because, yeah, I mean, it definitely seems like he could come up and be that guy. And maybe he'd overcome those control issues right away. Maybe he never does. Or maybe he's Blake Snell and takes a year and a half to do it. But regardless, I don't think that's going to be somebody who's must-add the moment he gets called up.
And he doesn't profile to be an ace.
Like, I mean, he has a lot of strikeout potential. Yeah. He throws very hard.
But he's not someone who, throughout his career as a prospect, it's not, you know, a Michael Kopech type of prospect. It's not a, you know, even Lucas Giolito type of prospect. And obviously, Lucas Giolito's a very good example of why those prospect rankings might not matter all that much when it comes to pitching. There's no such thing as a pitching prospect, but... Well,
I mean, they get hitters wrong all the time, too.
Yeah.
But he's
not the kind of guy that every scout looks at in season eights. You know, he's not Forrest Whitley.
I will say he's historically shown up higher on the prospect list than his numbers would suggest he should be. They do like him a lot. He reminds me of Billy Wagner. And Billy Wagner, you know, a short stature has a lot to do with that. Billy Wagner obviously wound up being a closer instead of a starter. That wasn't always obvious when he was coming up through the Astros system. I think if Sheffield doesn't overcome these control issues, he's going to have real issues pitching deep into games and could meet a similar fate as a reliever instead of a starter. And there's no guarantee, obviously, that it'd be a closer. It just depends on what scenario he winds up in. So I don't love him for dynasty purposes, but there's definitely upside there.
All right. Two more emails. Bob, Ray, and Cedric, it's some kind of super esoteric Seinfeld reference about two guys who beat up Kramer. I don't know. In a 12-team head-to-head points leagues, if Cespedes comes off the DL in the next few days, Buster will have an open DL spot on his roster. Which starting pitcher would you want to stash of this group? Marco Estrada, Ervin Santana, Ian Kennedy, Jake Junis, or Drew Pomeranz?
I don't think Jake Junis will be an option.
Okay.
I expect he's going to come off the disabled list about the same time that Cespedes does.
Okay.
It sounds like Pomeranz.
Pomeranz may as well. I mean, it has to be Santana.
Yeah.
He might not
rehabilitation from this finger injury finger surgery, I think it was, hasn't gone well.
Last couple of starts have been a lot better.
Okay. So hopefully he's trending the right way.
Yeah. And he might be back within the next week.
Yep.
And Blake, based on Heath's outlook for D. Gordon in the second half, he traded Carlos Rodon and Ronald Acuna in a roto league for D. Gordon. Grade the trade.
I'll give it a B+.
Acuna and who else for D. Gordon?
Carlos Rodon.
Well, Heath, president of the Carlos Rodon fan club, is giving it a B+. Then I have to give it at least that, right? I'll give it a B+ also.
Okay. That's it. That's today's podcast. We'll be back tomorrow with one game of worth of baseball to talk about, so that'll be exciting. We'll be previewing week 17.5?
It's 18.25, I think.
Okay, 18.25. Let's start Carlos Rodon.
Or maybe it's 16.75.
Start Carlos Martinez and Kyle Hendricks tonight?
Yeah, start them both.
Yep.
All right, we'll be back tomorrow with more fantasy baseball. Congratulations, Adam. We'll see you guys later.